Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche. Auch bei den Johnsons. Oder, Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau. Made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Welcome to the State of the Race. It is Friday, September 20th, 2024. We are 46 days out from the general election, 11 days away from the vice presidential debate, and early voting in Minnesota and South Dakota starts today. We are in the middle of this election right this very moment. What's coming up in this episode? Well, we've got 905 sex scandals that have to be talked about and all broken in the last 24 hours. We have a very interesting and maybe disturbing spending issue going on between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And we have an introduction to the PulseCast. This is a brand new service we're bringing you here on State of the Race that helps you synthesize the entire election picture from all the experts. We'll get to that here in just a couple of seconds. So first, let me give you the quick key metrics of the day. And this is sort of the reason why we're doing the PulseCast thing. For example, Nate Silver, who's, you know, probably the best known election forecaster, has Donald Trump today at a 51% chance of winning the election. Now, that is down from over the past, week or week and a half, from about 64%. So it has been a significant fall. That's the day right before the debate, September 9th, 64.4% was the peak for Donald Trump. That's gone down to 51%. The reason, though, I bring this up is 538, which is the site that Nate Silver created and then gave to Disney in a way. He wound up working at New York Times and over at ABC Disney. And then when he left ABC Disney, they kept the name of the site. He kept his model. So his model says 51% chance of winning for Donald Trump. 538 is a site that still exists, hired somebody new to build their own model. They say 39% chance for Donald Trump. So a 12-point split. The split has been as large as almost 20 points at times. So how do you make sense of that? We'll get into that here in a couple of minutes. But first, the quick candidate updates. Donald Trump has had a poll come out measuring his favorability and also the favorability of Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, of course, endorsing his opponent, Kamala Harris. And everyone's saying, oh, that's a huge big deal. Well, the New York Times and Philadelphia Inquirer and Siena College, you need like 12 organizations to sponsor a poll now, polled 2,436 likely voters nationwide and said that 47% had a positive view of Donald Trump. For Taylor Swift, they asked that same question. You might note she's not running for office, by the way, but they asked it anyway. She has a 44% favorable opinion. So Trump actually 3 points more favorable. Now, Taylor Swift's negatives are a lot lower than Donald Trump's in the poll, but kind of comically, basically, there is a higher favorability for Trump than Taylor Swift. Kamala Harris, by the way, on that poll, 48% favorable, 49% unfavorable. Over on the Kamala Harris side, she's spending some money, lots of money, lots and lots and lots and lots of money. One thing Kamala Harris can do very well as a candidate is raise money and spend money. She's very good at that. She'll also be very good at spending money as a president if she happens to win. But White Dudes for Harris is in the game. They have an eight-figure swing state campaign from White Dudes for Harris. You cannot make this stuff up. It's just insanity. This is how the left wants everyone broken down by little tiny racial groups. But here we go. White Dudes for Harris going to be pouring money into the campaign. And that's just some of the money that is being spent by Kamala Harris and her associates. One thing I want to draw your attention to is a massive spending disparity between the digital ad spending for the Trump campaign and the digital ad spending of the Harris campaign. And if you go back in history a little bit, you'll know, you know, Barack Obama was praised for his Facebook efforts. He was spending all this money on digital. He was the king of the digital world. That was the best thing in the world. Then Donald Trump really embraced that tactic in 2016 on the right. That, of course, was evil that he did that. And we had to have all sorts of election integrity problems that we were told about, of Russia was coming in and winning the election for Donald Trump. So when Trump did it, it was bad. When Obama did it, it was good. I think this time it might be good again, because Kamala Harris is the one doing it this time on Meta's platform, which, of course, includes Facebook and Instagram. The spending disparity is incredibly wide. For example, in Pennsylvania, Kamala Harris spent $1.3 million on Facebook and Instagram. Donald Trump spent $22,465. In Michigan, she spent $1.5 million, Kamala Harris, while Donald Trump spent $34,790. All told, the spending on these two platforms, $12.2 million for the Harris campaign, to only $611,000 for the Trump campaign. Now, that's a major disparity. They go on to explain why this is. This is a New York Times story, by the way, but did not mention that. Trump, outspent Democrats online early in the election cycle, but Trump is facing a cash shortfall, they say. Now, this is a tough one to take because, of course, this is one of the benefits of having a multi-billion-dollar candidate. You really shouldn't have any cash shortfalls. That shouldn't be an issue. They are trying to take all of Donald Trump's money and sue him out of existence, so that might be part of it. But you'd hope that that money can be there if they need it. Also, though, it emphasizes that Trump is depending on the durability of his donor list, which probably will work pretty well. In other words, he's already got the donors he needs in a list. He doesn't really have to market on Facebook anymore. Risky, but possible. And obviously, Kamala Harris also has a very big list, so we'll see. The other part of it is that he believes in the power of television. I don't know. I mean, television does have a lot of power, and it might work, but that is a risky strategy. Quickly, let's run through these 7 million sex scandals of the day before we make this podcast a 3-hour podcast. We first of all have the news in North Carolina with Robinson, the gubernatorial candidate for the Republicans, in sort of a sexual scandal in that he has been accused of making comments on a porn message board in between 2008 and 2012 called Nude Africa, which I'm sure is in your bookmarks, but apparently was a site, at least at one point. I will say, posting on the message boards of a porn site, not just going to a porn site, but actually posting on the message board of a porn site is probably the least productive behavior of any human being in history. Now, Robinson denies that he ever did this. He says it is not his words. It would be there's a lot of evidence that shows that either he did it or someone with a very, very close association or understanding of intricate word usage and screen names of Mark Robinson did it. And you'd have to go back and somehow post-date this in an old form to pull it off. It would be a difficult scam to pull off, not impossible when you're talking about these sorts of stakes, but Robinson is denying that. Then you have Matt Gaetz, who is embroiled in a long-term scandal with potentially underage girls. He's denied this all the way, has largely been exonerated on most of this stuff, but there is a new set of charges there coming in a lawsuit. They're saying they have cell phone evidence that he was at a party with a 17-year-old. See if that turns into anything. You have the New York City COVID guy. This is Dr. Jay Varma. This is broken by Steven Crowder in a hidden video where he admits on camera he went to a bunch of sex parties in New York City, also a dance party under Wall Street, all of this in the middle of the COVID scare when he was telling everyone else they had to get vaccinated and had to stay inside at all times. Also, he was writing for the New York Times about how people had to remember COVID in like 2022 and still was doing this sort of crazy behavior, totally lying to the American people. Also, there's more developments with that when he's talking about how he said he wanted to get kids back in school, but the unions stopped him. So that'll be a big scandal. And then finally, RFK Jr., who's, given us this big pitch that he's this big changed guy. He is now supporting Donald Trump. Obviously, I think Donald Trump would be a much better president than Kamala Harris. However, RFK Jr. is a very imperfect messenger, to say the least. He's had all sorts of womanizing problems over his life. Famously, one of his affairs led to the suicide of his ex-wife. There's a lot going on in that picture, but he had been given this pitch that he's this changed man. He's married to Cheryl Hines, the actress, and now Olivia Nuzzi, the reporter, who is a well-known reporter, wrote a story about RFK Jr. and now has been suspended from her magazine because she had been apparently had an ongoing texting type of relationship with RFK Jr. while he was married, and she was married to another reporter who had previously left his former family to get with her after being Me Too'd, if I remember, if I'm getting the organization of all these things right. The bottom line is, not a good situation. RFK Jr. campaign has said he has never met her or has never seen her since their initial meeting for the piece that came out on RFK Jr. But of course, no one's alleging that they met. She's alleging that they had a sext type relationship. So we will see how that plays out. That's all to get to, where are we in this thing? Because you've got presidential races, you've got Senate races, you've got gubernatorial races. Where are we? And we've started this thing we've called the PulseCast. This is an attempt to keep our finger on the pulse of all the varying election models from all the varying sources. Most of these are mainstream sources. Some of them are very famous people, like, you know, a Nate Silver. Many of them are people you've never heard of or don't know, just data nerds that have put together their own models. But I want to know a couple of things, you know, because I check these sites every single day. It's part of my job, looking at election models, looking at polling averages, looking at new polls, looking at even prediction markets to see what's the vibe of everything, how to understand what these people really believe is coming. And this doesn't mean that it aligns exactly with my predictions. This is not, the PulseCast is not an idea to get, hey, what's Stu's prediction of what's going to happen? We do that on Stu Does America, and we'll do some of it here as well. I'll give you my opinion, but that's not what this is. This is just a finger on the pulse of all of these different data sets that no human being should be bored enough to look at individually. And that's why we call it the PulseCast. To get into why we're doing this, well, I think it's important. As I mentioned, you know, Nate Silver and his former site have a 12-point disparity. It's been as high as 20 points before. It's hard to know what means what. And I think there is a tendency to do a little cherry picking, to do a little doctor shopping, where you're looking for the right result that you want from your candidate. I mean, when I give a bad poll result on the air for Donald Trump, I'll get a bunch of people saying, wait, well, did you see this poll? It's a good one for Donald Trump. And, you know, I'm sure I did and probably gave that the day before. But the bottom line is we go through all of these results, good ones and bad ones. And what I want to know is not necessarily things that only help my candidate, results that only say, hey, this is going well for you. Or if you happen to be a masochist, things that are only going badly for you, because that's what you get from the mainstream media. You're going to get highlighted issues in polls that are only beneficial for Kamala Harris. I don't want that either. What I want is what all of them are saying, and then I can judge by my belief on other metrics as well. You know, of course, there's always everyone's judging things off their vibes, but I'm talking about stuff like fundamentals that are built into the election. You know, where I believe the best, you know, campaign efforts are being put in. Where's the money being spent? All that can come into your own prediction. Some of these election models attempt to put that in and synthesize that information into their own election models, but they all are widely split. And what's interesting about this is the reason for that. If you think about how polls and all this work, you know, you can ask a bunch of people who they think is going to win the election or who they're going to vote for, and they can tell you. But we take all that information and we synthesize it into a poll. But then, you know, one poll can tell you one thing, one poll can tell you another. So we take a lot of polls and we put them together and we have a polling average. And then what a lot of people said is, hey, the polling average doesn't tell the whole story. What happens to the fundamentals? What happens to the way these things break in the future? What about the Electoral College? How does that all play out? Well, then people put all those polling averages and all those fundamentals together and they came up with election models. And now there's a bunch of election models. Well, what about looking at all that stuff again and saying, well, I'm going to look at all that information. I'm going to put my money on the table and I'm going to bet on the outcome. And then prediction markets came out and we have all these different sources all over the place. And my view is You got to have some sort of vibe as to what all of these things mean together. And that's why we have the PulseCast. The PulseCast does not get our predictions out there. It gives you a picture as to what the experts are saying. You can, of course, choose to never listen to a poll, although I don't know why necessarily you'd be on this particular episode of the podcast if you didn't care about polls. But you can choose not to care about the polls. You can choose not to care about election models. You can choose to dismiss all of this. That totally is fine. But at the end of the day, a lot of these decisions get made. Money is spent on certain states instead of other states because of polling information. Polling information leads these campaigns. Polling information, both internal and external, makes a big difference. And it is also a way to plan for the future. If you're thinking, it's everything from tax policy to economic policy to all sorts of things that affect your life in a day-to-day way are featured. And are the result of who wins these elections. And the way these campaigns are run are the result a lot of times of how these polls are messaging this information to candidates. So the way we built this is we have a, you know, somewhat complex algorithm here to tell us each day what these numbers spit out and give us the information we need as to what is the actual percentage. And without waiting and making you wait too long, I want to give you the day, today's update, which is Donald Trump has a 44.77% chance to win the election, according to the PulseCast. Kamala Harris has a 55.23% chance of winning the election as well. Again, this is a summary of a bunch of other people and all their experts and all these election models and prediction markets and polling averages. And you might be a little depressed by that number. Let me put it in perspective a little bit. 44.77% chance means that Donald Trump is the slightest of underdogs. You could definitely call this race a toss-up. That would be a completely fair way of looking at that. It is not a situation where you should be panicked. Donald Trump still has 6 weeks. If you're looking for him to be victorious, he's got 6 weeks to turn this thing around and really doesn't need to turn it around by much. There was an analysis by Harry Enten, who is the data journalist over at CNN and actually does a pretty good job, even though you heard the words CNN come out of my mouth, you might have immediately dismissed it, but Harry does a good job. And he pointed out if the polls match exactly what we have right now, Kamala Harris would win, in his estimate, 276 to 262 in electoral votes. However, if the polls were off, and they're always off, there's never a series of perfect polls. They always miss by some margin. The question is, how much is that margin? If they missed like they did in 2020, Donald Trump would win relatively easily, 312 to 226 in the Electoral College. However, if the polls missed like they did in 2022, that one favored the Democrats, Kamala Harris would win 319 to 219. Bottom line is, we don't actually know all that much. I just gave you a lot of information to tell you, basically, we have no freaking idea. There's no way to know at this point who's going to win. The next 6 weeks are important. What this should perhaps build in you a little bit, if you happen to be a person who wants Donald Trump to win, is that it's not going to be easy. This is not a Trump versus Biden election where he can sleepwalk his way to victory. This is going to be difficult. And if you want to get involved, if you want to get out there and vote, if you want to be the type of person who is, you know, either supporting campaigns by volunteering or donating or whatever you want to do, you're needed. That's what I think this tells you. This is a very close election. Donald Trump absolutely has a very serious chance of winning it. I wouldn't even call him a real underdog at this point. I still think the fundamentals of this race, when you talk about the economic measures and the issue sets that are important to voters, drastically favor Donald Trump. Secondarily, Kamala Harris is a very weak candidate. She is not a good candidate at all. She's doing everything she can to get the hell out of the way so that no one notices that she is a bad candidate. But usually these things wind up popping up. It's hard to hide yourself for months and months at a time. And usually these things wind up popping up and correcting. The question is, can Donald Trump stay on message? Can he do his very best campaigning over the next 6 weeks? The best campaigning that Donald Trump ever did was the last month or so of the 2016 election, where after the Access Hollywood tape came out, Donald Trump was convinced he was in real trouble and stayed on message and wound up winning a very close election. That same thing can happen here, but it is not guaranteed by any means. The media will be against Trump. The media will make sure everything that he says is portrayed in the most negative light, and that everything that Kamala Harris says is portrayed in the most positive light. That is a given. Every Republican candidate knows that getting into the race. And in addition, with Donald Trump, you also have the seemingly very real possibility they are going to try to kill him at some point. Again, we've gone, I think, three or four full days without an assassination attempt. Let's hope we can continue that streak. But there's all sorts of real, real problems, risks, concerns, and terrifying moments for Donald Trump here in the next 6 weeks. He can win. If you're concerned about him winning, you're going to need to get to do everything you can to help him out, because it's not going to be an easy road. That is State of the Race for today. By the way, you can get the PulseCast every single day on the radio program. We're going to release it there. It'll probably also be up on my social media feeds. We'll make sure that you can see where the race stands, where it's tracked over the past 6 weeks, and on into the future for the next 6 weeks. But this has been State of the Race. Make sure to tune in next week, and we'll give you all that information as well as more episodes of this particular podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.